I said my ass hurts.
Huh?
Aw, geez, someone thought I was a chocolate bunny and took a huge bite out of my ass. And it hurts!
I can barely hear ya. Someone took a bite out of my ears.
Man, I know we look like chocolate, we smell like chocolate, but people can't eat us. We're soap!
Want to fill your Easter basket with fabulous treats that aren't loaded with sugar? Check out all the Easter soap goodies from Bubble Genius. Like our Here Comes Peter Chocolate Tail Soap, also available in pre-chomped My Ass Hurts gift baskets. What did she just say?
Vegan and bunny-friendly bath and body from BubbleGenius.com.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Okay, there's a serial killer, right? Well, no, wait, and he's being hunted by a cop, and he's taunting the cop, right? Sending clues who his next victim is. He's already holding her hostage in his creepy basement. So the cop gets obsessed with figuring out her identity and in the process falls in love with her. Even though he's never even met her. She becomes like the unattainable, like the Holy Grail.
It's a little obvious, don't you think?
Okay, but here's the twist. We find out that the killer really suffers from multiple personality disorder. Right? See, he's actually really the cop and the girl. All of them are him. Isn't that f***ed up?
The only idea more overused than serial killers is multiple personality. On top of that, you explore the notion that cop and criminal are really two aspects of the same person. See every cop movie ever made for other examples of this.
Mom called it psychologically taught.
The other thing is, there's no way to write this. Did you consider that? I mean, how could you have somebody held prisoner in a basement and working in a police station at the same time? Trick photography.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
You can read about it tomorrow, or possibly see it tonight. But with radio, you get it now and get it right.
I'm a hypocrite. I ask for sincerity and I lie. I denounce the system as I embrace it. I want money and power and prestige. I want ratings and success. I don't give a damn about you or the world. That's the truth. For this, I could say I'm sorry, but I won't. Why should I? I mean, who the hell are you anyways, you audience?
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is March 8th, Thursday, 2012, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show, brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Your product, your genius, Bubble Genius. I'm Bob.
I love any show that starts with Sarah saying her ass hurts. It can only go downhill from there.
Oh my God! You know you have a you must have a very tolerant girlfriend.
Why is that?
Well, you don't mind flirting with other people. I noticed that today on Twitter.
Oh no! Mary Beth. Of course.
Yeah, right,
I do that with Mary Beth all the time. Yeah, Mary Beth Williams from Salon. She and I are like incurable flirts with each other.
Yeah, she wrote a great piece in Salon about the Rush Limbaugh, Bill Maher birth control thing. We're going to talk about that.
That was what started the debate between me and her that inevitably deteriorated into hardcore flirting. And that's the way it always is. We start with, like, good, sensible political conversations, and it always ends with, you know, her being turned around and me doing horrible things to her. It's pretty awful.
Yeah, it always ends up in who's going to climax first. That's how it
goes. Exactly, yes. It does seem to come back to that. No, I like Mary Beth. Mary Beth is a sweetheart. And no, nothing's ever happened, and I don't think anything will. But yes, flirting with her is a blast. It's a contact sport.
Well, we have just another slow news day, man. Nothing's going on. Nothing. In like the last 3-4 days. It's been like a wasteland of news. Joking.
You know, I honestly wouldn't know because I have been up to my nuts in a project that's got a deadline of early next week, and I'm like ready to put a gun in my mouth. But yes, but I do seem to remember hearing something about some really fat guy who said something stupid about women or some nonsense like that.
Yeah, well, we talked about it last week. In fact, we were so focused on Breitbart, the Rush Limbaugh stuff was just beginning as we were doing the show. And so we talked about it on, we ended up talking about Rush Limbaugh and Susan Fluck and everything and contraception. All of that happened on the after party because we just ran out of time. Filled up the entire hour with Breitbart. And there is more Breitbart news this week, which we're going to talk about later on in the show. The Breitbart people released this super secret video that's supposed to blow the lid off of the Obama presidency. And, of course, it does.
Scandalous. Boy, I saw that and I was just like, wow, that's huge.
I can't believe it. He hugged a guy.
Huggate.
So we're going to talk about that on the show later on. But I wanted to start off with the Rush Limbaugh thing. Oh, yeah, you know what? There is some breaking news at this particular moment. I mean, we're recording the show. It's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, West Coast time, L.A. time. And I'm told that only 90%, well, actually, there were only a couple of actual paid advertisements on the New York WABC feed of the Rush Limbaugh show. There were 90% of the ads on the Rush Limbaugh show in New York. I mean, this is the flagship station for the Rush Limbaugh show. 90% were unpaid PSAs.
PSAs and promos. That's a kick in the nuts. Surprise, Rush.
Yeah. 86 ads aired today on Limbaugh's show in WABC. This is from America Blog. This is the first time I've been at America Blog in maybe half a year.
Yeah.
But 86 ads aired today on the Limbaugh show on WABC in New York City. 3 occurrences of dead air, 1 advertiser sticking with Limbaugh, 3 advertisers asked to be pulled, 3 Netflix ads. I don't know how that happened. Netflix swore up and down that they don't run ads deliberately on the Limbaugh show. So I guess this slipped through the cracks. 1 O'Reilly Auto Parts
ads for crap movies in particular.
Yeah.
Movies that involve sexual harassment.
Yeah. 3 Constant Contact ads. They were dropped. They were supposed to have been dropped. 77 free PSAs. 77. I mean, that's a lot. That's what you hear. You hear these PSAs like the American Egg Council, things like that. That happens usually on radio shows that are aired on Sunday nights at like 11 p.m.
Wouldn't it be great if they were for women's issues, too?
Well, I mean, usually they run on shows that
get yourself screened for breast cancer, that kind of thing.
Yeah, they either don't have ads at all. Or they're run during times when Arbitron doesn't gather ratings, which is usually Sunday nights. So this is all very positive. Oh, here we go. Here are the PSAs. 7. Oh, this is staggering. 7 United Negro College Fund ads.
Oh, that's perfect.
6 Feeding America ads.
Somebody was doing it just to spite him.
6 Big Brother Big Sisters ads.
Sure.
14 U.S. Department of Health and Human Services ads.
There you go. That's, look at that.
That is great. That's what I want to hear.
Somebody is totally screwing with him.
I know. I mean, that's the kind of ad. Because, of course, HHS, that's where all of this stuff with birth control comes out. I mean, that's Kathleen Sebelius. So that's perfect. 14 Save the Children ads. 17 American Heart Association ads. 13 New York City Office of Emergency Management ads. All PSAs on the Limbaugh show. Well, you got to love that. I mean, you got to, I mean.
All governmental administrations that the right would like to see closed in favor of handing it over to the free market.
That's right. That's right. So, and they're all being promoted on the Limbaugh show. Well, thank you. I mean,
things that piss off Ron Paul.
Exactly. You know, I think at this point, I want to say I haven't seen the latest tally as we record this show. Again, it's March 8th. If you're listening to the show later than the day that we're actually recording it, the last I saw was 43 advertisers, though it might be up to 45 advertisers have dropped the Limbaugh show. So, you know, and on that note, I mean, I want to talk about this because I don't know that we have a completely different point of view on this, but it's slightly different. As far as, I mean, I know that there have been some people who have taken a much more hard-nosed approach in defending Limbaugh, like Andrew Sullivan and Bill Maher, who I'm sure they disagree with Limbaugh, but they're actually defending him and his ability to earn a living by saying these things.
Bill Maher's defense, you know, Mary Beth sort of chalked it up as being one kind of like sexist white guy prick defending another. I think it's a little bit deeper than that. And I think that obviously Maher having been the victim of saying something on air that got him into really, really big trouble and basically threatened to destroy his career at one point, I think that he's sort of a little bit gun shy when it comes to that kind of thing. And that was sort of where I stood. I mean, I'm just wary. That's all. I get the going after him. I can't stand Rush Limbaugh. I think that removing him from the discourse, however you do it, would greatly improve this country. I think dropping his fat ass in a volcano would be even better. I think he's despicable. He's, you know, the words that I quite frankly can't say here, because when I say it without profanity, it doesn't really have the impact, and it's way too tame. I mean, I would rant against him with profanity that was more vile than anything you can possibly imagine. I freaking hate the guy. The only thing I'm concerned about, and this is something that I've said before, is I'm always very, very wary of these targeted internet campaigns, boycott campaigns that are aimed at people who say something that someone else doesn't like. I think that Limbaugh crossed a huge line. And I think that, you know, the joke about Sandra Fluck being a Democratic operative makes me laugh out loud, because every time I hear this, I'm just like, no, you know who's a Democratic operative? Rush Limbaugh. He's got to be, because he just handed the Democrats the biggest favor they could possibly imagine. And he really just torpedoed the Republican Party to a certain extent. Because he is the voice of the Republican Party.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He has said something that was so incendiary, so absolutely out of line, so over the line, that there's just no going back. I mean, there isn't. And the point that I made before is it's not like he's pissing off some, you know, tiny, tiny minority group that he can kick around a little bit. He's targeting half the population. But while he's done all this, I think he's obviously paying a price. I think that he and the people who are beholden to him on the right are going to pay a price, regardless of whether or not Limbaugh were to lose any advertisers out of this. As long as people made it public and circulated and said, listen, if you haven't heard, this is what this jackass said, and you need to hear and you need to understand how horrible it was. My concern is I don't want to be hypocritical. And there have been times that other people, whether they be – I'm especially strong about it when it comes to comics. You know, guys like Tracy Morgan, Gilbert Gottfried, you know, people who have said stuff that is really, really kind of offensive and pisses off a certain segment of the population, and they stage these massive, you know, we demand an apology. You have – you know, we're the people you have to come and kowtow before and, prostrate yourself before. And, you know, we're the come to Jesus talk that you have to have. And I have a real problem with that. But I do extend that out beyond comics to sometimes entertainers. And, yes, I think Rush Limbaugh is a horrible creature. And I think that he definitely is, as from piece that he wrote. Kind of differentiating between what Limbaugh said and what others have said, that kind of set me a little bit more straight. But in the end, he is kind of, I hate to say it, a bit of an entertainer. And because of that, I'm just a little bit wary of targeted campaigns against basically to stop people from talking or against people who have said something that you don't particularly like. And the only reason I'm wary about it, the only reason is because that can be turned around just as quickly.
Yeah,
and it can at some point be targeted at somebody that, quite frankly, doesn't deserve it. Limbaugh 100% deserves it.
Well, no,
he deserves to get his ass kicked all up and down. I'm just concerned because I don't want to be hypocritical and say that what he said was, you know, was 100% offensive, and say what Tracy Morgan said, which I know angered the gay community, was not offensive. You know, I'm just – that's all. Believe me, I'm not defending Rush Limbaugh at all. Well, look, I'm just being cautious.
I understand your point, but I disagree with it. I think the reactions to whether it's Bill Maher, Tracy Morgan, or what have you, Michael Richards, I think the reactions are always proportional to the offense. I don't think we've seen. I don't think there was any major boycott that transcended just a singular movement and bled into the broader progressive movement or Democrats or what have you, or even conservatives. I don't think it was. I think the reaction matched the quote unquote crime. But in this case,
100% correct in that.
And that's what's happening with Limbaugh, because it's not just about the word slut or even the fact that he attacked someone who is just a private citizen who dared to speak to members of Congress in an informal hearing. This is about.
Right. We had this conversation last week about the fact that it's done not just to attack her, but it's done to create an object lesson so nobody else speaks out, and that's an issue.
Well, no, I mean what it is, it's a form of rape, as far as I'm concerned. This is a way to use sex as a means of oppressing and harming women. I mean, I think that's ultimately what it comes down to. And this has been a 20-year history.
I think that's
for
a little heavy-handed to say to call it rape, but I do agree with what you're saying.
Well, it's sexual domination. It's a way of using
sexual
female,
domination. Yes, I get that.
It's a way of using female sexuality against their will, which to me is a form of verbal rape. I mean, this is basically Rush Limbaugh saying, no, you can't have control over your sexual organs, so I'm going to step in and I'm going to take control over what you have to, what you can and can't do with your body. And to me, that, I don't know what else to call it. It's certainly not as heinous as physical rape by any stretch of the imagination, but it really is that kind of domination. It's that kind of oppression that is as old as evolution itself. And to me, this reaction from no matter who it is absolutely justified. Because I mean, even look back. I mean, look at some of the clips that we've played on this show. I mean, Rush Limbaugh has been doing this to women since he started his show. I guess it was around 1988 or so. You look, there's a chronology of this that has been occurring over and over and over again, whether it's feminazis or going after Hillary Clinton or calling Chelsea Clinton the family dog or God only knows all the things he's said over the years. And so finally, this is the straw that broke the camel's back. This is to say,
I agree
enough
with that.
Of this.
I agree with that completely.
And he's well within his right. I mean, no one's saying that we need to pass a law. Congress doesn't need to pass a law against Rush Limbaugh or anyone like him. No one is suggesting that. But what we are saying is he's able to exercise his freedom of speech, use public airwaves. I mean, we own these airwaves as taxpayers. He's allowed to use these airwaves to say whatever he wants to say, so long as we can hold him accountable. I mean, and that's the basic principle at work here. And so, you know, if Bill Maher says something as heinous as Rush Limbaugh and as on a regular basis as Rush Limbaugh has, then, you know, maybe he deserves it. Maybe he deserves that pushback, but I don't think he ever will, because, you know, as long as liberals aren't stupid about it, certainly stand-up comics can say certain things and get away with it because of, you know, what they, you know, the sort of the atmosphere.
Yeah,
that they...
I provide safe haven for stand-up comics almost across the board. I mean, I hate Larry the Cable Guy, but, you know, his kind of, you know, his kind of, wise ass redneck jokes, you know, that take aim at people that I quite frankly don't think he should be taking aim at. You know, I don't give a crap. You know, I think he's completely unfunny, but yeah, look, he's got a right to say because he's a comic. I give comics a lot of latitude.
Yeah. You know, I would talk about this more. We got to take a break. Back after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Ah, we're back. That was longer than I expected. Let's see, Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I was saying that, you know, it's all a matter of context, I think. And if we, you know, you can kind of get into the weeds and kind of try to weigh one person against another. But I think it all demands the context and also the influence that that person has. And I think in a lot of ways, what we've seen with Rush Limbaugh over the years is that he, you know, he has the ear of members of Congress. And I don't know how many members of Congress listen to the show, but it is quite a few. I mean, this is the guy who, you know, for a period of time, and I don't know so much now that the Republican primary is underway, but for a significant period of time there at the beginning of the Obama administration, I mean, the guy was considered to be sort of the de facto leader of the Republican Party. That this guy was,
and he sets the narrative. There is no doubt about that.
That's right. And this is a narrative that forgives the oppression of women through legislative means. I mean, I don't think that a lot of these laws that we've been seeing in Virginia and Alabama and Pennsylvania, you name. I mean, I think on Think Progress they created a map that showed all of the states in which a lot of these really oppressive laws have been passed, whether it's about abortion or contraception. I don't think the popularity of these laws would be as high as it is if it wasn't for Limbaugh, who is really the flagship of the conservative AM radio right. If it wasn't for those guys and similar talk radio hosts, it wouldn't be nearly as popular. It wouldn't have the momentum that it has if it wasn't for these people cheering them on. And we're talking about hours a day, every day of the week, across thousands of radio stations.
And, you know, the interesting thing about it is that it took forever. It did. You know, it took, what, 2 decades? But there's no denying that when you give someone free rein to say incendiary things, it is almost always just a matter of time before they cross the line, before they take it too far. And Limbaugh has had free rein for the longest time, and you do that long enough and you really do start to believe that, you know, your shit doesn't stink and that you can get away with anything. And eventually you will cross the line. And he absolutely crossed the line. I mean, and once again, I mean, like you said, proportional. Again, he didn't target somebody, you know, some piddly little group, some trifling number. You know, I mean, granted, I don't think anybody is worth that kind of targeting anymore. I think that it's a shame that he got away with insulting, blacks and women and gays and everybody else for so long. But to finally just come right out and smack women in the face, I mean, really, really do it. I mean, half the country, again, I keep going back to that. It's like, you're picking on a giant. You really are. And you're dumb to not realize that you're picking on a giant.
That's right.
You know, you're really poking a freaking lion with a stick on this one.
This is one of those situations where he just can't. He can't be allowed to wiggle out of it. I think if we keep up the pressure that something might end up cracking here. I don't know that it's going to be like, you know, Glenn Beck losing his Fox News show. But I do think if
Rush, I mean, there's no one. One of the problems is that there's really no one to fire him.
No. And they won't. But I mean, what could happen is just an ongoing marginalization of Rush Limbaugh to kind of negate some of his influence. And I think this is the other aspect of all of this, is that
I think that's going to happen too, by the way. I truly do.
Yeah. Well,
I think there's been a tipping point when it comes to Limbaugh, and it just happened.
Yeah, and it's about time, because I think AM talk radio has been so thoroughly dominated since the erasure, since the elimination of the fairness doctrine. I think that the you know, conservatives have taken over this format. And, you know, there's a lot to say about, well, progressives don't really have an audience who listens to AM talk radio, because it's mostly, you know, blue hairs and, you know, octogenarians who are, you know, dialing up on their transistor radio. And I think that's a bit of a misconception. But the fact remains is that progressive radio has been tried, and few have been able to really make a name for themselves, because it's you know, I guess progressives naturally swing towards have lives and have more modern ways of getting news and information.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, that is it. And I love radio. You're talking, you know, obviously we're doing a show right now. You know, I love it. And I like some talk radio. I mean, I don't, when I'm not reading about it and all that, I do tend to tune out of political talk radio, no matter what kind it is, only because my attitude is like, look, you know what? I'll listen to Stern. I'll listen to ONA, which, by the way, does turn political sometimes. And that's when I shut it off, you know, when Anthony starts ranting about right-wing politics and how he's put upon as a freaking millionaire.
Yeah.
But I listen to that stuff and it makes me laugh. And that's what I want when it comes to sort of talk, either that or, of course, NPR. Other than that, I spend my time listening to music, of course. And I do agree with you. I mean, for some reason, there's something that's very linear about the radio format. This may not make sense, but hopefully you'll get me. You know, something very sort of linear and a little too straightforward about the radio format that doesn't click with the way most progressives think and live their lives. And I'm not saying that, you know, that that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm saying that, you know, if you're progressive, you have a tendency to sort of overanalyze things, think a million different things at once and go off in a bunch of different tangents. I mean, it's just really, that's sort of the way, that's the liberal mind right there. Yeah. Sometimes it's a really bad thing. Sometimes it's not. But for some reason, to me, that way of thinking has just never really lent itself to radio.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's what it comes down to, I think, as far as the ownership of the airwaves. You know, the actual air itself, the air that we breathe and the air upon which radio waves travel is part of the commons. It's something that everyone, at least in the United States, everyone has a stake in, has an ownership in. Much like the water supply. Now, no one would say, well, we're going to allow just this one group of people, this small group of people relative to the population, to own the entire water supply of the United States of America. I mean, that happened in Bolivia, and there was a revolution that occurred as a result of one corporation owning the entire water supply in Bolivia. I believe it was Bechtel, but I could be wrong on that. So
I think it was.
So likewise, the public airwaves are, you know, being dominated by right-wing talk radio. Well, there ought to be some balance. There ought to be some proportional representation on the public airwaves representing all opinions. And that's all the Fairness Doctrine was about. It wasn't about suppressing right-wing views. It was about balancing right-wing views with views that also reflect the population, because the population owns the air upon which these views are expressed. So, I mean, that's what it comes down to. I mean, no one's demanding that Rush Limbaugh and other people shut up and go away. Well, some people are. But realistically, we just want some balance here. And so I think while there are really legitimate reasons for to boycott Limbaugh and to contact his advertisers based on what he said, there's also a broader principle here with regards to use of public radio waves. So I hope there's going to be some change on that front. I really do. I think it's crucial. Even if
think that the politics of resentment tends to stir up an audience.
Yeah.
And nobody does the politics of resentment better than the right. And I think that that's what also brings audiences in and keeps them watching Fox News and keeps them listening to Rush Limbaugh, is because, quite frankly, they give them someone to hate, somebody to dislike, somebody to blame for whatever the hell's going on that's wrong in their lives. Which, you know, I kind of look at it and I'm like, look, you live in America and your life can't be that bad. You know, trust me, it's worse than other places.
Well,
but yeah, they fuel that resentment, and that just keeps bringing people back to the tent.
Well, I want to talk about the good Rush coming up after another break, back after this. Yeah. Today's show brought to you, as it always is, by BubbleGenius.com. And thank you again. I mean, I never get to say this enough, but thank you to Bubble Genius for supporting the show and supporting liberal business and supporting liberal causes. It's really a rare thing these days, and see also the discussion we just had about control of the airwaves. If you want to get all of your Easter soaps, Bubble Genius is featuring Easter soaps right now, so go to BubbleGenius.com and check it out. And make sure that your bath and body products reflect the season. And that's what Bubble Genius is going to discuss right now.
Ouch! My ass hurts!
What?
I said my ass hurts!
Huh?
Aw, geez, someone thought I was a chocolate bunny and took a huge bite out of my ass. And it hurts!
I can barely hear ya. Someone took a bite out of my ears.
Man, I know we look like chocolate, we smell like chocolate, but people can't eat us. We're soap!
Want to fill your Easter basket with fabulous treats that aren't loaded with sugar? Check out all the Easter soap goodies from Bubble Genius, like our Here Comes Peter Chocolate Tail Soap, also available in pre-chomped My Ass Hurts gift basket. What did she just say?
Vegan and bunny friendly bath and body from BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
If you want a discount, a 15% discount of your entire order from Bubble Genius, make sure to enter your promo code Bob and Chez, BOBANDCHEZ. It's exclusive to this show. No one else gets it unless they listen here, right here. So 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. So you know who is really kind of cool in all of this with Rush Limbaugh was the band Rush. One of my favorite bands.
Yeah, you did your good deed for the year.
Yeah, right. I can just give up for the rest of the year. Just step back and say, well, my work is done here. Thank you. But I thought, you know, someone contacted me, and I don't want to take all the credit for this, but and I don't even know if she wants her name mentioned on the show, but a frequent listener to the show, a reader on the blog. I'd never met her before. I don't know who she is, really, other than the fact that this person emailed me out of the blue and said, here's the name and email address of Rush's publicist, Rush, the Canadian rock band. And, you know, why don't you contact them and say that, you know, suggest that they stop having their music played on the Limbaugh show? Because this is one of the things that I've always kind of resented. In fact, we talked about this on the after party last week when we played that clip of Rush Limbaugh and the Spirit of Radio playing in the background. I said, well, God, you know, F you, Limbaugh, for playing a cool band on your show. And, you know, Peter Gabriel had already pulled his music off of the Limbaugh show because Sledgehammer was played under the Slut Remarks. And so then the Spirit of Radio was played under the Demands to See Sandra Flux Sex Tape Remarks. And so what I did is I used this email address and just wrote to the band's publicist. And I said, you know, look, you know, I'm a big fan of the band, and I'm sure they wouldn't want, you know, their music associated with this a-hole. So, you know, maybe send Rush Limbaugh a note that says stop using the music. And I didn't think it was going to really go anywhere. I didn't think it was going to actually garner a response or any sort of action, because who the hell am I? And, well, they're Rush, and they can certainly police their own music. And they have, you know, taken steps along the way to kind of guide what appears on YouTube and determine, you know, what they want to have out there and what they don't. They're a very tight-knit organization, and that's one of the reasons why they've sustained themselves for 40 years. But so I did get an email back a couple of days later, which was quite a surprise. I got an email from Bob Farmer, who's their lawyer, the head of legal affairs at Anthem Entertainment. And, you know, he was quite surprised to hear all of this, that the Rush had been using, you know, Bravado and the Spirit of Radio and some of their other songs. I'm not sure all of the different songs that Limbaugh had been using. But, you know, so he, you know, asked me to research for him and send him some contact information for the Limbaugh show and Clear Channel, which I did. So I sent back a bunch of, you know, email addresses and fax numbers and things like that. And I was thinking, okay, well, now it's going to be a few days. It's going to be a little time waiting while they, you know, kind of talk about this and see whether or not they want to poke this hornet's nest. And so, and that's when I started tweeting about it, because I couldn't not mention anything. So I kind of threw some teases out there onto Twitter and said, you know, this could potentially be some interesting breaking news on this. Stand by. And Chez, just as you had emailed me saying, what is it? Tell me.
Yeah, well, of course. I don't like to wait.
Right. Well, and of course, I was prepared to tell you. But just as I was writing back to you,
I was gonna scoop you if you told me. By the way, I was gonna totally go with it and take credit.
That's right. You're just gonna run like run down Main Street.
I was gonna run with it. Yeah.
Right.
I would use the news producer excuse.
Exactly.
The public has a right to know.
The public has a right to know. And but just as I was writing back to you, I got an email response back from Bob Farmer with like the entire signed cease and desist order that he was delivering to Clear Channel and Premier Radio Networks and the Limbaugh Show. And so then I posted this thing, and unfortunately, it's a bunch of people picked it up and it got some traction online, Huffington Post. And again, I feel vindicated in my support for this band because, you know, I think there are a lot of reasons why they, you know, are one of the few bands that have enjoyed such ongoing popularity and ongoing longevity. I mean, their longevity is, I think, kind of unprecedented. I mean, how many bands have had the original members all together for practically their entire history, minus the first album, their entire history?
Right.
There have been very few like that. And who also...
No, that's true.
And bands that have been around this long who haven't turned into nostalgia acts. I mean, you see, like, I mean, the Rolling Stones and all these bands, they basically just play their old stuff on tour, and that's what they're all about. And you know, I know other bands that are like this, and they just stop recording music and stop making the effort to progress as musicians and develop new sounds and new ways to write songs. But I mean, that's what Rush has done, and so it was great to see them do the right thing on this. And in fact, today this is so cool. I got an email today from the band's tour manager, Liam Burt. If you're a fan of Rush, you know the name Liam Burt. He's been with the band forever. And I'm going to read that. I'm going to read that email because it's funny. It's a little revealing story about some Rush Limbaugh listeners. And so we'll do that after another break, back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Jesus, song I haven't heard in forever.
Oh, my God. You know, I just listened to this album the other day, and I really forgot how great an album it was.
Yep.
It's Seal's first album, like 1991. And this album was actually produced by Trevor Horn.
Mm-hmm.
You know this. Trevor Horn, who was a guy, he's most famous for being in the Buggles, but went on to become one of the best producers in music after that. But hey, I wanted to read this email. It was a funny note from Rush's tour manager about some Rush fans. It says, Bob, we were on tour, I believe it was 1997, in Portland, Oregon, and myself and the band's accountant had just closed the box office and finished settling that night's show with the venue and the local promoter. I didn't know they still did that. I thought there was some kind of electronic transaction and maybe a check at the end or something. I don't know. But they actually go to the box office and they're swapping cash, I guess. We get a call backstage from the box office manager telling us that they have a couple of patrons looking to get refunds on their tickets. The show is more than halfway finished. We point this out and say it's awfully late to be requesting a refund after having already been a large portion of or having seen a large portion of the show. So it's halfway through the show. A couple of people are demanding a refund at the box office. They ask us to come back up to the box office and that it will make more sense once we have all the details. So,
oh, boy.
You know where this is
going. In other words, you have to come see these idiots.
Yeah. And that's the polite Canadian way of describing it. So, long story short, there are two women in their late 50s, certainly not part of the Rush demographic. I mean, I don't think there are any women in the Rush demographic.
That's true.
That's me saying it. That's not part of the email. Who had purchased tickets expecting to see Mr. Limbaugh.
Wow.
These two people.
Please tell me they refunded their ticket. Please. It would have been worth it just for the laugh. Here's your money back. Thank you.
These two women turned up at a Rush concert expecting to see Rush Limbaugh. And they sat halfway through the thing. The opening act and the first half of the Rush show, which And still to this
before
day.
Before they realized that Rush Limbaugh wasn't showing up.
That's right. I mean, and to this day, Rush is doing two full sets with an intermission because they've got such a catalog of music and stuff they want to play live, plus all their new stuff. I mean, it's a long show. And at the time, in the 1997 tour, that was the, I think that was the Test for Echo tour, Rush was performing 2112 in its entirety at the end of the first set before the intermission. So these women sat through the entire first set of Rush, including this 20-minute song, and thinking, well, God, Mr. Limbaugh's got to come on any second now and criticize the Clinton administration. So they're sitting there waiting for it, and then they realize, oh, doy. So they had sat through it. This is continuing.
Could they not read, like, the tour shirts, the programs, the, you know, whatever was around at that time? How stupid do you have to be?
Well, that would presume that they were able to read.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah.
So
we don't think or read. We just do what Rush says. Ditto.
Right. Ditto. The opening act was Carrot Top. Right.
That's what gave them hope.
Early Larry the Cable Guy when he was Dan Dabney.
I think it's Dan Whitney.
Right.
Yeah, I only know that from the back and forth he got into with David Cross.
Yeah. Yeah. In case you don't know, Larry the Cable Guy is not a real redneck. He's just pretending to be a redneck. His name is Dan Whitney, and he's I don't know if you would say he was normal, but he's not a redneck. He's not a reg. Go on YouTube and look up Dan Whitney, Larry the Cable Guy, and you'll see his stand up act from, you know, like what, the middle 90s?
Forever ago. Late 80s, he wore like khaki pants and like a Hawaiian shirt. And yeah.
Yeah. He's like, peanuts are yucky on an airplane. Ha ha ha. And those chairs, they're really uncomfortable. He realized quickly
the only kind of audience he could possibly appeal to, at least, you know, intelligence wise.
Yeah. So let's get into some more serious stuff here, because this is, you know, I don't want to spend the entire show on Limbaugh as we did with Breitbart last week. But Ashby posted this story on the blog just before we started the show today, and it's this law that's been introduced in Arizona. Again, Arizona being the nexus of crazy in the United States these days.
It's so disturbing too, because I drove through Arizona obviously to get out here from Miami when I came out a couple months ago. Arizona is like the most beautiful state. It is so gorgeous. It really, really is. And it's just a freaking cesspool of insanity.
It is. And it has become that since, I want to say when Jan Brewer took over as governor. I mean, wasn't Janet Napolitano the governor of Arizona?
You're asking me? Yeah, I think so.
I might be entirely wrong. I'm going to look that up. But there's this new law called the...
I was busy listening to my iPod.
So there's this law that's been introduced in Arizona, and it's called the Wrongful Birth Bill. And it's all about preventing women from having an abortion, even if it kills them. The Arizona Senate passed a bill this week that gives doctors a free pass to not inform pregnant women of prenatal problems because such information could lead to an abortion.
That's pretty messed up.
In other words, doctors can intentionally keep critical health information from pregnant women and can't be sued for it. According to the Arizona Capital Times, quote, the bill's sponsor is Republican Nancy Bartow of Phoenix. My God. She says allowing the medical malpractice lawsuits endorses the idea that if a child is born with a disability, someone is to blame. So Republicans are banning lawsuits against doctors who keep information from pregnant women so as to prevent them from choosing to have an abortion. Good gravy. Mm. I mean, you know, it's not only, well, this is going to, I don't want to get into the weeds of this. I mean, I was going to say, you know what, sometimes in some severe birth defect situations, an abortion can actually be the merciful solution to that situation.
Yeah, you're opening a Pandora's box there.
I mean, that's a huge one. I happen
to actually think that there's an argument to be made for that, but that's that's a can of worms you don't want to get into as I continue to mix metaphors on this show.
Well, again, you know, I think this is ultimately a decision that should be left up to the parents of that fetus or child, whatever you want to call it.
I think that if it blocks a doctor from giving pertinent medical information of any kind, then obviously it's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do that. The patient is entitled to know just about everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, by the way, Janet Napolitano was, in fact, I was remembering that correctly. She was the governor of Arizona before Jeb Bush.
You just figured that out right now, right, without Googling it?
I just looked it up.
I'm such a big fan of that.
I like that.
I'm going to do that on the radio from now on. I'm going to start spouting off, like, little pretend facts that I totally just looked up on Google that make me sound smarter than I am, because trust me, I'm not very smart.
Yeah, I was actually both.
And by the way, before we go any further, yeah, my girlfriend is actually wonderful. I thought I'd just say that. I'm like, you know, I'm not sticking up to, you know, stop myself from getting a beating later. But, yeah, I should have immediately said that when you said that, you know, that she's very tolerant. She's wonderful.
Okay, good. Has she walked into the room now? Is that it?
She's not walked in the room now. Okay. She's working. I'm sitting at my computer doing a freaking project that's making my life crazy.
So that's the latest salvo.
That's what I call porn, by the way. That's my term for masturbating to Asian porn.
Oh, by the way, on that note, you know, just coming up on the after party, if you subscribe to the after party, by the way, it's only $6 a month, and it's really easy to do. You just go to the site, go to the top of the page where it says the Bob and Chez Show after party, click on that. And it'll take you to the page where you can just, in a couple of clicks, you can all be signed up and ready to roll. And then you get to listen to the afterburner. You can join the exclusive club of people, the fleet of people that get to listen to the afterburner.
We are the admirals.
Week. And people are I'm really glad to see. I mean, we're getting a lot of subscribers on a regular basis, and
yep,
and people are commenting about it on Twitter and really loving the show. And it's everything we didn't get to on this show, plus a lot of really almost embarrassingly
awful,
honest things.
Awful stuff.
And awful, awful stuff. And one of the things I want to talk about on this week's show is Rush Limbaugh's Viagra stag party. I just want to recap that and talk about that a little bit. Plus, we're going to be talking about, Paula Deen in the news again this week. We have a brand new Steven Weber tweet of the week that's going to be coming up. News about the Hulk Hogan sex tape.
The kind of contraception that no one will argue with.
And
a Hulk Hogan sex tape.
And we've got probably the funniest sound of a fart in the history of YouTube. That's coming up. That's coming up on the...
Have we really already degenerated into that? Is that what it's become?
That's coming up on the after party.
Fart humor. Excellent.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Mom will be so proud.
So, President Obama, the big surprise, breaking news, President Obama, shock horror, was against racism at Harvard when he went to Harvard Law School. He was against racism. Holy hell. Stop the presses. This is ridiculous. This is like Andrew Breitbart.
That's Breitbart's from the grave final little, you know, thumbing of his nose.
That's right. That's the big posthumous breaking news from Andrew Breitbart, the big scandalous tape that's supposed to blow the lid off of the Obama administration and tell us about who he really is. My God, that man hates racism. And that's
surprise.
What it is. It's
that Barack is going to get no traction whatsoever except with the far right.
That's right. And it's only the far right who have hang-ups about race. And the very same people who vote based on, you know, racial resentments.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It is resentment politics. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, he is, you know, he's not just a black guy. He's not just one of those good black guys like Alan West, mm-hmm, who's batshit crazy.
Yeah.
You know, he's somebody who acknowledges that there is racism in this country.
Yeah.
And has at one time or another embraced either literally or figuratively those who acknowledge that there has been racism in this country and that black people have suffered because of it.
Right. And at the time, when Barack Obama was attending Harvard Law School, there were one or two black professors at Harvard Law School, including this guy, Derrick Bell, who decided to take an unpaid sabbatical until Harvard decided to hire more black people to their faculty. Completely reasonable protest. The guy's not burning down buildings or, you know, causing all kinds of hubbub. And by the way, that's a word I use often, is hubbub, because I'm from 1920.
You and Mitt Romney.
So there was a rally in support of Derrick Bell on the Harvard campus. And oh, my God, in 1990, here's what Barack Obama said.
And I remember that the black law students had organized an orientation for the first year students. And one of the persons who spoke at that orientation was Professor Bell. And I remember him sauntering up to the front and not giving us a lecture, but engaging us in a conversation and speaking the truth and telling us that he has to learn at this place that I've carried with me ever since.
Incidentally, no teleprompter. F you, Republicans.
Now, how did this one man do all this? How's he accomplished all this? He hasn't done it simply by his good looks and easy charm. Although he has both in ample measure. He hasn't done it simply because of the excellence of his scholarship. Although his scholarship has opened up new vistas and new horizons and changed the standards of what legal writing is about.
Okay, it goes on and on, and he ends up, you know, he introduces Derrick Bell. Derrick Bell steps up, walks towards the microphone. Barack Obama and Derrick Bell embrace. End of video. And this
and
is
then Derrick Bell says, kill all white people.
Exactly, and oh my God, impeach, impeach!
You know what? My attitude is, I listen to that and I'm like, I laugh, really. It's like, really, that's all you've got?
That's it.
All you've got. After teleprompters and Kenyan socialist comments and all, that's really, this is all you've got against him.
That's it.
You got nothing else? Really?
It's the only thing. That's what they've got. That's what they've got. And
congratulations, Andy. Your last attack was a good one. What a body blow you landed there.
I was going to play it on the show, but we ran out of time. There's a great clip of Soledad O'Brien. The lovely and talented Soledad O'Brien. They're just totally going after this Breitbart stooge on CNN, this guy Joe Pollack.
Huh?
And just really challenging him on the asinine nature of this this breaking scoop, this
good
bombshell video, which, as you heard, my God, again, stop the presses, call your mom. The president was against racism. I mean, that's really all it is. And then he hugs a guy, and they want to turn this into Reverend Wright Part 2.
Good luck with that. Yeah. Good luck with that. Have at it. You do that.
And so, but it's not going to work. It's not going to work. Because we've been down that road. And again, the guy, Joe Pollack on CNN, this Breitbart guy, Soledad O'Brien that this is part of a vetting process. Well, you know what? We've had for a lot of us since 2004, to find out who Barack Obama is. He's written two books, for God's sake. There's a world of information that's been released about his life. The vetting has been done. This guy's been president for quite some time now. This is nothing about vetting. This is entirely about the Southern strategy, appealing to angry white people who have resentments about the fact that there's a black president. And so they're cashing in on that. And that's what Breitbart was partly all about.
It's hilarious. They got nothing. They got nothing.
Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely and see you on the after party, Jess.
See you.